gunned down if they had not been shifting profits. So there's a strong allegation of profit shifting. And then an investigative journalism organization called Ama Bongani did an investigation in 2015 where they found that during the years that Cyril Ramaphosa was the chairperson of the MTN board, MTN had been shifting billions in profit from the continent to outside. And then we saw much more recently in the Paradise Papers leak that Shandilta, a company which Cyril Ramaphosa founded in 2001...
Coquetto, we just have 10 seconds.
...as shifting profits from the country. So there is a pattern of behavior.
So are you concerned about what this means for South Africa in our last 5 seconds?
Completely, completely. I think we should be deeply concerned, and we should be just as vigilant as we were in the times that we had President Jacob Zuma, if not more so. The moment that we in after Zuma has stepped down should not see civic movement.
Coquetto Moeti, I want to thank you for being with us, founder of Amandla Mobi. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Henry Ford College and WHFR are proud to celebrate Black History Month by hosting a variety of free events to celebrate the history of African Americans. Join us on the main campus throughout the month of February for live music, lectures, movie screenings, and a student and culinary arts center. For more information, stop by the student activities office or go online to hfcc.edu for a list of events and times.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio. From the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views and opinions expressed on the new WHFR Journal are those of the hosts, producers, and guests, not necessarily those of WHFR, its licensee, Henry Ford College, or its Board of Trustees. Enjoy.
Welcome to this edition of the new WHFR Journal. I'm Susan McGraw, along with Alan Mazurek, here on 89.3 on your FM radio
dial.
Good
afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon, and happy season of love to you.
We got snowed out last Friday, but we were able to get it on the air on Tuesday, which was great because we had some great interviews that people were able to listen to.
It was interesting to, I got to replay and listen to my own interview with our new Vice President of Student Affairs, Dr. Daniel Herbst, and boy, I found him even more interesting the second time around than I did the first time around. So that and that was pretty good the first time, too. So if you're interested in catching last week's or any of our journal episodes, we do archive them, little note, of course, on our website at whfr.fm. Again, whfr.fm. Just click on talk shows. You'll find the link to the new WHFR Journal. And there we live in perpetuity, I suppose. Good or bad, right?
And now we're going to talk about probably the most interesting subject of all, the one that we're all looking for in life, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about love, right?
Absolutely.
All right.
And love is a many splendid thing. I didn't write that.
So I hear that.
We are very happy and excited to be joined in studio today. First time in our studio, so welcome to Dr. Ryan Scholler, who is in the philosophy department here. He is the philosophy department here at Henry Ford College, and is just it's been a pleasure to know you and to get to see more of what you do on a regular basis with the concept of philosophy, and really excited to have you here, in particular, Ryan, under this topic of love. Welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the invitation.
Certainly. We speak of love in a very romantic way. This literally is our theme for this particular week. We do theme weeks periodically at WHFR. So all of our shows from this past Sunday through tomorrow will be in some way having to have a connection to love, whether it's romantic love or self-love or love of a particular thing that we haven't established yet, or whatever the case, love of the world, love of the universe, the environment. Most of us tend to think of, we see the hearts, we see the chocolates, and we just think romantic love. But from a philosophical standpoint and an academic standpoint, it really is so much more than that. Tell us
certainly.
A little bit about it.
Oh, yeah, certainly. So I think it's really interesting that the word philosophy itself already contains love in it. It's made up of two different Greek words, this philo part at the beginning, is actually one of the Greek words for love. The Greeks had a lot of different words for love. They, you know, English is sort of a simple language in a lot of senses. We tend to subsume a lot of different concepts under one word, and so we use love, like you said, to talk about a lot of different things. But the Greeks were well aware that there's a lot of different types of love, and so they had different words for the different kinds of love, and this philo is one of them. It's where we get this file ending on a lot of words, such as an Anglophile, a lover of English, a Francophile, a lover of French.
At a radio station, we say audiophile.
Audiophile, yes, certainly, certainly.
We love high-quality audio.
And then there's darker words, such as pedophilia is related to it. And then one that I just ran into thinking about this was hemophilia, which literally means a lover of blood, which is actually a medical condition where the blood doesn't properly clot. So when a person's injured, they bleed profusely. And so it's a really weird use of the word love there, that they don't actually probably love the bleeding. But so that this beginning part of the word philosophy is literally about love. So philosophy has been engaged in the concept of love since its inception. The other half of the word, the sophie part, is the Greek word for wisdom. And so if you know anybody who's named Sophia or Sophie, they're literally named wisdom. And so philosophy then in its beginning is literally the love of wisdom, and a philosopher would be a lover of wisdom. And this sounds a little weird on the surface, but I think if you think about it a little bit, the way philosophers are portrayed in the ancient Greek tradition, especially by Plato, they're seen as these people who have fallen in love with the pursuit of truth and wisdom and knowledge. And there were these other guys in ancient Greece that we call the sophists or the sophists, and they were sort of they're excellent orators, and you could hire them to argue your case in court. You could hire them to train your children in the art of persuasion, things like that. And their name, sophist, is that second half of the philosophy word, but it's missing the love component. So at least the way Plato portrays them, that their main goal was material gain, and they were missing this actual love of wisdom in the pursuit of wisdom. And it's interesting to me, too, that pursuit is always there in the concept of love from the beginning of the philosophical tradition as well. You know, I think about the concept of falling in love. If you've ever fallen in love before, it's a really weird experience. It's very strange. First of all, it seems to be thrust on you almost against your will, not against your will, but without your will. We pass by people every day. We interact with people every day. But then suddenly, as if out of nowhere, there's this one person that becomes this unique object of our affection, and really weird things happen to us. You know, we become almost obsessed with them. We can't think about anything else. Everything else in our life just seems to sort of fade away into insignificance. You know, we forget to eat. We can't sleep. We're completely consumed by thoughts about this person, and hence the falling in love. It's something that just seems to happen to you. And in a lot of ways, it's wonderful, but in a lot of ways, it's also kind of painful. And, you know, it's been described as a sickness. We talk about people being sick in love and love sick. You might have a family member or a friend ask you, are you feeling okay? Is everything all right? They see the symptoms of the illness, right? And yeah, probably the appropriate answer is, I don't know. I don't know if I'm all right. Something weird is happening to me. I think I'm okay, but I'm not exactly sure. So the ancient Greek philosophers were portrayed this way. They're sort of these people who had had this experience, but it was an experience with truth and wisdom and knowledge, and everything else in their lives sort of faded into insignificance. And they're obsessed with the pursuit of this object of their affection. So philosophy is inherently about love, and there's plenty that it has to say about the topic of romantic love as well.
Interesting. When we get into the nitty-gritty of the discussion of love, while, again, you've gone very deep very quickly, what I'm glad you did, because we don't have a lot of time.
Right. I was going to say, let's review. Let's review. We've got philosophist, which is love of knowledge. Yep. We've got sophist, I thought, was one, which was, just break that down for
they're
us.
Like wisdomists. They're wisdomists without the love, right?
All right. Let's
what
see,
fun
then.
Is that?
Now, they trade in wisdom. They sell wisdom.
What's our phrase for romantic love?
Well,
falling
so,
in love?
Yeah.
I thought there was a word there.
Well, you know, the Greeks had another word for romantic love, which is eros, which we know we get our word erotic from it. And so romantic love would usually be under the heading of eros. And I think there's a really fascinating dialogue that Plato writes called the Symposium. And in this dialogue, Socrates and several other influential Greeks are at a banquet. The word symposium literally means drinking banquet. They all would get together and they would drink a lot and they'd make these speeches about
I've had
things.
My share of those.
Yeah. You know. And it's sort of like a truth serum type thing, right? Where they would say things they wouldn't ordinarily say, and sometimes they were really profound, sometimes they were ridiculous. But these different characters got up and gave speeches about eros. And two really important ones, I think. One of them is the famous Greek playwright Aristophanes. He's one of them. And he gets up and he tells a story about this idea that when the gods created humans in the beginning, they actually created them as sort of dual persons. So you'd have two people sort of together with their faces facing away from each other. And sometimes it'd be two males, sometimes it'd be two females, sometimes it'd be a male-female combination. And these creatures, they got really powerful. And so the gods decided to cut them in half and separate them from each other. And then so they spent the rest of their lives trying to find that part that had been removed from them. This is where we get the whole phrase, you know, the other half, or even soulmate comes from this. And so, again, the pursuit element is there. I think this is where we get things like, you know, there's this famous line in the Jerry Maguire movie that you complete me, the idea of you know, love as I'm missing something is inherent in that. And then Socrates eventually gets up and does a speech. And he's actually relaying some ideas that were given to him by this woman named Diadema, who's a priestess and a philosopher. And he really builds on this idea of pursuit, and he talks about how we're drawn to he says that Eros, the god Eros, the parents of the god Eros were lack and resourcefulness. Lack, so a sense of missing something, a sense of needing something to complete you, but then also this resourcefulness, this sort of craftiness that allows you to pursue it. And so anyway, Socrates, you know, sort of presents this idea of falling in love as me being confronted with an object of affection that in a sense I feel would complete me. But once I actually possess it, that's the goal in the beginning, the pursuit, and resourcefulness is what you use to possess it. I think I'm going to be happy once I possess this thing, but. Like the philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer says, possession takes away the charm. Eventually, I think in the beginning of a relationship, that there's this, it's almost like a drug. It's magical. There's a charm there. But of course, inevitably, that has to fade. It can't be like, you couldn't stand having it like that for the rest of your life. And
we'd like to try, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what a lot of people are. That's why they go from one relationship to another. Yeah. They want to have that again.
Someone's got to do the laundry eventually, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's true.
That is kind of, you know, and I guess that's a question is, does anybody, you know, truly, you know, fall in love more than once, or are they ever trying to chase that if that first relationship doesn't work out?
I think certainly that weird experience I was describing can happen to a person more than once. It's happened to me more than once. But I think, you know, I think a lot of times we think of human beings as primarily rational creatures. But if you think about humans in an evolutionary sense, I think that the animalistic, appetitive parts of us are much older Reason is sort of the most recent immigrant to the human being, and so there's all these species related urges and desires that they're only geared to propagate and keep the species going. They don't care about the individual. Nature doesn't really care about the individual, and so I think what happens, it's kind of like reason is the recent immigrant to the human being, and so all those appetites and urges they use and exploit reason for their purposes. One philosopher says reason is the slave of the passions. And so what happens, I think, is there's this philosopher, Schopenhauer, I mentioned before, who talks about these weird optical illusions that we experience. They're called Fata Morgana. I don't know if you've ever seen one, but they're these weird optical illusions where they usually happen on the sea or ocean or on a lake, big wide open spaces. And it's a weird thing, but you can see things like a ship off in the distance. It looks way bigger than it is. It might look upside down. There might be a right side up one and an upside down one on top of it. There's pictures of them. You can look them up. And so anyways, it seems like nature has equipped the human mind when it has some sort of need, like hunger, for example. I'm hungry. I need food to keep surviving. It magnifies and inflates the need to the point where I actually feel like my next meal is going to make me eternally happy or something like that. And that forces me to pursue it and get it so I can survive.
Does that mean I love food?
Well, I mean, in a sense, it's related to love because it's the same type of attraction. So if you think of the need to propagate the species, that's a need that nature has. So it inflates and magnifies with incredible intensity this object that can satisfy that need. But like Schopenhauer says, possession takes away the charm. Once the need's satisfied, you know, it's like you come out of a dream and you're like, oh, wait a minute. Why was I so obsessed with that meal? Or why was I so obsessed with that person, I guess, in some senses?
And certainly I would think as we get older, the process of the ability to love, the ability to understand what's happening to us, whether it is a romantic or otherwise, love of a child, love of a thing, love of oneself,
very different
things,
aren't they?
Going to change as we get older. I think in the younger, the teenage years, it is sort of that pursuit, and then once the pursuit is conquered or accomplished, it's like, oh, got her. Yeah. Move on to the next one.
I think the love of a parent for their child is similar in this way that, you know, parents really worry a lot about their children, I think, and their worries are magnified and inflated. You know, they're not reasonable worries most of the time, but there's like an innate need to preserve that child. And so the same type of thing happens with these Fata Morgana-like illusions, like, oh, no, my child is in danger, when really they just haven't called you yet or something like that.
That makes sense, because you try to argue that with a parent who would, you know, to their death say, no.
Yeah, they it's too
need
real.
Me.
It's too real to deny.
So it is, Another thing that popped in my head, it's just what you were just saying a moment ago, the borderline between love and need to survive and you know, evolve and so on, and potential addiction. Because it certainly sounds like what you're speaking of is walking that line a little bit.
Exactly, yeah.
When does it become...
When does it go sideways?
Yeah.
Well, I think...
That's when it comes to even, you know, interpersonal relationships, you know, romantic love, things like that. It can.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it probably... you know, I'm not an expert on psychology or... But I think it's probably, you know, an addiction to this moment where the magnified sense of my need will be fulfilled and I'll have eternal happiness if I get this thing. I think it's probably an addiction to that experience, because it's probably, if not the best experience in life, it's one of the most incredible experiences in life. So having it happen as much as possible would be wonderful. I think what a person feels when they take certain types of drugs is very similar to it too. It's euphoric. So the addiction would probably be connected to that, wanting to have it more.
Yeah. Ryan Scholler is joining us today, and he is a faculty member here at Henry Ford College in the philosophy department. And if you're enjoying this discussion, and we're certainly so happy to have you giving us this incredible detail, and if you like this type of talk, take a philosophy class from Ryan or some of the other very capable adjuncts. Tell us just briefly about what's happening here at Henry Ford College and how somebody can get involved and just learn more about these very interesting topics.
Sure. Well, the philosophy department here typically offers three main classes. We do Introduction to Logic, which is sort of the foundational rules of good inference and good reasoning. And then we do Introduction to Philosophy, where we approach sort of the typical classic problems of philosophy. And I'm actually, romantic love is one of those problems that I'm going to be pursuing with one of my classes this semester. And then we do also ethics, which is all about, you know, what exactly does it mean for an action to be good or bad, right or wrong? And philosophers have had plenty to say about that. We do have a couple other classes, a history of philosophy sequence and Eastern philosophy class that we offer periodically, but the first three are our staples.
Great.
How do other philosophies or other cultures handle these concepts? I mean, is this universal? I mean, can we say it's truly universal? Or?
Well, definitely. I mean, you know, Eastern philosophy is much, much older than Western. Western starts about 500 BC, and in the East, it goes back another 1,500 years or 2,000 years. So most of the topics we talk about in the West have already, they already finished talking about them before philosophy started in the West. So, you know, the setup and the rules of inference and the what we'd call the metaphysics in the East is a bit different. So it takes a lot to even, you know, sort of penetrate what they have to say. But love is certainly one of their main topics. Yes. And the dissatisfaction that human beings experience in life when they don't get things the way they want them.
So it's not so much just always looking at what you do have and how that affects you, but the void and how
right.
that can affect you as well.
Yeah, and how you react to the void or respond to it. Yeah, certainly.
Interesting. Well, in this week of love, we don't want to talk about the voids here at WHFR. We want to talk about the good stuff. So if we have somebody that's thinking, I really want to impress my special someone and quote some really cool philosophers on the subject of love and all that gushy, mushy stuff, what are your recommendations?
Well, I do have this quote from the French writer Stendhal that I think figures into this whole thing in a way that it's a bit ambiguous, so it could be taken different ways. But he said that beauty is nothing more than the promise of happiness, which is pretty deep. And I think it's connected to what we were talking about a few minutes ago, that you know, in life, when you're confronted with beauty, and that would include handsomeness on the other side, if you're talking about the masculine, it presents itself to you as capable of fulfilling all of your needs for happiness, right? So it does issue this promise, but I think that the question remains if that, you know, not all promises are kept. So it's possible that promise of happiness is an illusion and it won't be kept. But as a quote, I think it sounds pretty good. Mm-hmm. Beauty's nothing other than the promise of happiness. And so, yeah, you know, a lover could say that to his or her beloved.
Very nice.
It sounds pretty nice, I think.
I think so, too. Thank you.
There's always some sort of risk of love, right, in expressing love. I mean, you know, the safest bet, and I don't know my Greeks from my Romans, but, you know, the narcissism is, that's a pretty safe bet, right? If you can, you know, be at peace with yourself. But on the other hand, we generally want more, right?
Oh, certainly. And I think if you're honest, you have to admit that I think most of the elements that go into our concept of love are pretty self-focused. You know, what I can get for myself. But, you know, it's interesting, over the course of a relationship, people say I love you to one another for years, right? And I think they probably mean different things at different times in the course of that relationship. So in the beginning, when they say I love you, they might mean something like, I'm overwhelmed by your beauty and my obsession for you. I can't take it. I have to possess you. That might mean that. But then, you know, fast forward to year 10, I love you might mean, you know, you're my best friend and I'm in this committed relationship and I have no plans of leaving it. And then you fast forward another 10 years, it might mean,
this is a good business arrangement, and let's
right,
just keep
right.
it going for now, right?
Which is interesting because I think the concept of romantic love is a pretty new one. For most of human history, it was an economic arrangement for most of it. But, you know, I saw a Valentine's card
I think my wife's teaching right now, so I can say I'm old school. Yeah.
I saw a Valentine card yesterday that the cover of it said, I tolerate you.
Oh, my goodness.
So I thought, you know, it's possible that in a relationship when a person says, I love you, they might mean something like that. It might, you know, evolve to mean, I'm still in this, or I still really like you, or you're still my best friend, plus, right? Something
but
like that.
But then it may end up somewhere else, even after another 15 or 20 years,
sure,
as well.
Yeah.
When you look at people who have been, you know, together in a relationship, a loving relationship for 40, 50, 60 years or something.
Sure. And I think it's possible that one of the elements of a long-term relationship is it's easier probably a lot of times to stay in it than leave it. And so I love you might just mean I don't have the courage to not be in this anymore, which is a bit pessimistic, but
it takes us back to
the
I'm in it for myself kind of thing, right?
Yeah. And it's interesting to me that the I often drops in the exchanges. We often say love you instead of I love you, because I think the I element of it is the most personal, and it's a lot easier to say love you than to say I love you. It's interesting. I don't know what exactly to make of that, but
it is interesting.
It is interesting.
Yeah. Well, we're glad you kept your promise and stayed with us today. Really appreciate you coming in. If somebody wants to learn more about the classes that are offered through the philosophy department, or reach out to you directly to talk about some of the details of what's being offered, how can they reach you?
Well, certainly they can email me directly. My email's rshowler@hfcc.edu. That's rshowler@hfcc.edu. You can also find me on the employee directory on the school website. And of course, if you look at the schedule of classes, it'll tell you what we have coming up in the schedule.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It was great.
Certainly. Our pleasure. We look forward to exploring more the topic of love as we continue this edition of the new WHFR Journal. Dr. Ryan Scholler, again, many thanks for being with us. And stay tuned. We do have so much more on the way.
Hey there, loyal listeners. It's that time of year again. Valentine's Day. That's right. It's Valentine's Day. But here at WHFR, we're taking a whole week to show how much we love you. Valentine's Week. So tune in to your favorite DJs all this week as they bring you flower bouquets of love. Valentine's Week. We tried to find a way to send you chocolate through the radio, but that technology doesn't exist yet. We already looked into it. So spread the love this Valentine's Week. Valentine's Week. Right here on the only station that's making waves, WHFR.
Welcome back as we continue in our theme of love for this exciting week here at WHFR Radio. We welcome you to this particular interview. I'm very fascinated in the love that others can bring us. In particular, there's this population, I think, that we often don't think about. If it's not something that we were brought up with, ingrained with, you know, grew up with, we don't often think about the beauty and the love that an animal can provide us in our lives.
I was going to say, when we were talking in the last segment, I had mentioned, does anybody ever really fall in love more than once?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I was thinking of, you know, you have that one person that you fall in love with, and the ideal is that, you know, you're with them for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for a lot of us, we experience that several times over the course of our lifetime, because we tend to outlive some of the companion animals that that stay with us.
Absolutely, and they are just a wonderful addition to the family, to the household. And we we've got one of the experts in town in to talk with us about that. We have representing Friends for Animals of Metro Detroit, Peter Poulos, and Peter is the Director of Marketing and Development for this organization. Relatively new to the Friends, but not new to the industry, if you will. Peter, welcome to our airwaves today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us on. We appreciate the opportunity.
Well, certainly. I think one of the most exciting things that connects me to Friends for Animals of Metro Detroit, formerly Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter, formerly Dearborn Animal Shelter, so we want to make sure that we're piggybacking to the original group
there's a lineage in history there, right?
Might remember. Just your logo is so darn cute. It is the heart with the little paw in it, and it's red, and it's got the cute little, you know, the cute little paw. Just the sweetest thing. So when we talk about this, really the feasibility of what an animal can bring to a human heart.
Sure.
Tell us, speak to that a little
Absolutely,
bit.
Absolutely. Probably, first of all, you should know, if you don't already, that about 68% of American households are pet-owning households. So when you extrapolate that across the United States, that's an awful lot of pets and an awful lot of loving homes, which is great. A little bit about us, about Friends. You had referenced, if you will, sort of the various name changes. We are actually celebrating our 25th anniversary this year. It will actually be 25 years this August that the Friends for Animals of Metro Detroit, and obviously the names that it was known as from its formation, was actually founded by a group of concerned citizens that were residents of the city of Dearborn. And what they wanted to do at the time was see if they could, I don't want to say necessarily do a better job, because, you know, you're not going to, this isn't a finger pointing thing or anything like that. But I don't know if you know, most municipalities have some form of sheltering, if you will, or they need to resource that service out. Michigan state law actually mandates that municipalities provide what they deem as animal care and control. Because first and foremost, animal welfare is a public safety issue. Now, how that plays itself out in communities will vary from community to community. And the way that it looked, if you will, in the city of Dearborn before the formation of the Friends as a nonprofit group was the animal control officers for Dearborn would, you know, either gather the strays or they would accept surrender animals and would take them into the current shelter, which is where we're at right now on 2661 Greenfield. And I'm sure many of our listeners here probably been there over the years, but and then in the early 90s the Friends got together, and what they wanted to do was to see if they could increase the number of animals that were adopted from there. And with city resources being what they are, not just here but of course across the country, you can imagine that, you know, there's other things that people might think take priority over you know, animal welfare and so forth. So the Friends got together and they approached the city of Dearborn and they said, hey, how about if we put together a memorandum of understanding, an MOU, and see if while you, meaning the city, will still maintain, of course, the animal control officers and sort of that sort of service, if the actual operations of the shelter itself, which included trying to find loving homes for these animals as well as taking care of them while they're in the shelter itself, we think we might be able to increase the number of animal lives that are saved. And here we are 25 years later. With, you know, last year, for example, we adopted out a record 1,915 animals that found loving homes.
Wow.
And yes, a big wow.
It's like between 5 and 6 a day, right?
Absolutely. No, it's tremendous. And, of course, again, if any of your listeners have been to our current shelter, you know that it's not the most, I call it user-friendly shelter, if you will. So you really, really want to, you know, you really got to want to adopt, if you will. You might even miss us based on the, you're shaking your head knowingly.
I'm very familiar, yes.
Absolutely. So, which is why we actually broke ground last October on a brand new shelter. And this new shelter is going to be right off of Michigan Avenue there in Greenfield. It's the location where the former Amtrak station used to be, which I know is familiar to area residents.
I spent a lot of time in that train station that probably felt like what animals spend the time they spend in a shelter waiting for somebody to adopt them. But,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Our current square footage, for example, which where we is where we house the animals now, our sheltering capacity is 4,000 square feet. When the new shelter opens, which will be later this fall, it will be 16,000 square feet once it's completed.
Four times the size.
Absolutely. We're going to more quadruple. And but more importantly, it's going to be more environmentally friendly. It's going to be a healthier, more spacious facility for the animals. It's going to reduce their stress level. For example, we're going to keep the dogs and the cats separated. In terms of families, when they come to adopt, if you come to our current shelter right now, you've been there before. You know how cramped we are for space. Mm-hmm. And there's not a lot of get acquainted space, so that will be something that will absolutely be a welcome change, if you will, in our new shelter.
Wow. Peter, talking about the get acquainted space, you know, when we want to find that special someone, we go on dates, you know, we get to know them, we maybe check them out on social media nowadays, all that kind of stuff.
Take them out for dinner, turn our head the other way when they have to go to the bathroom, all that stuff, right?
Yeah. So how does that process work if someone
that's a great question. You can start by looking online. You can check out our website, which is metrodetroitanimals.org. Again, that's metrodetroitanimals.org. And you will see the animals that, in a real-time basis, that we have that are up for adoption. These will be dogs, cats, puppies, kittens, an occasional rabbit or two, if you will. Mm-hmm. But you can check that out in terms of seeing their photos, as well as a brief bio on them. And by bio, I mean approximate age, as best as we can tell when the animal came under our care, any type of characteristics that we've noticed. And then you can come down to the shelter. And what we ask every potential adopting family to do is fill out an adoption application. Now, by application, this isn't anything that, we don't try to turn anybody down by any means. The application itself is more to help us, our adoption counselors, sort of be able to counsel you on the best animal based on your life circumstances. If you've got a 500-square-foot apartment and you come in and you want to adopt a 90-pound lab, we're going to tell you, you know what, maybe you ought to rethink this decision a little bit because it might not be a good fit. We absolutely want to place all of the animals that we have under our care, but we want it to be the best fit possible for you and for your family. We'll ask you questions like if you have other pets. If you're looking to adopt a dog, we'll ask if you've got little kids. Have the kids been around animals before? That type of thing. We want you, as an adopter, to consider every possible scenario, that we can think of, if you will, to make sure that the decision that you're making is the right one for you and your family.
Okay. What are some of the, and some of them are economic, maybe family circumstances, what are some of the reasons that animals are brought into, side of the system?
Sure, that's a great question. The surrender part of the animal welfare business or sector, if you will, as a
however
whole.
However you want to refer to it. Yeah,
sure,
I know,
absolutely.
Exactly, yeah.
It's an unfortunate part of what we do, but at the same time, it's a reality. And of course, it's actually more preferred, if you will, than, and you see this happen, all too often, where if people relinquish an animal, but not at a shelter, like, let's say they just go to another neighborhood and set it loose, and this is how you get the strays. Mm-hmm. That happens all too often, if you will. But when people do bring their animals for surrender, it could be due to a number of things. It could be that they're moving and they don't have another family member that will take the animal, and perhaps the place that they're moving to or the circumstances such that they can no longer care for the animal. A lot of times you might see where somebody passes away, and they were perhaps the only person in that household. It might be grandma or grandpa, and, they had the pet for a number of years. They pass away, and, perhaps there's only one or two surviving family members, and none of them are in a position to take the animal. It could be that you have children, and all of a sudden you've had an animal in your household, and then the animal itself is not used to having children around, and the animal just can't adapt. That's certainly not a common occurrence, but it does happen. But there's a number of factors that, as well as what you referenced, Al, in terms of sometimes people just fall on economic hard times, and they just can no longer afford to care for the animal in a way that they would like to, so they'll surrender that animal.
There's an organizational component of Friends for Animals of Metro Detroit called the Lonely Hearts Club, and I really love that. It's the Lonely Hearts Adoption Specials going on, and in this season of love, this week we're always loving here at WHFR, of course, but this is
this week more than any.
Yes, that's right. More than ever before. Mm-hmm. I just think it's adorable, and it says, our Lonely Hearts Club is too full of wonderful dogs and cats, and let's fix that. It's a part of it. Campaigns like this, when they're generated, do you find that it sort of, at least if nothing else, provides a little more awareness, like, hey, we're here, and if you've been thinking about this, maybe maybe now is the time, more of an outreach.
Absolutely,
kind of a thing.
Absolutely. Okay. And all of these different marketing promotions assist us in terms of calling attention to the availability of adoptive animals that we have under our care. So whatever we can do, and of course what we try to do as well is tie in some sort of financial discount to that promotion. Mm-hmm. So the one that you just referenced is currently one that is ongoing. Just, you know, over the holidays we had one appropriately entitled The 12 Dogs of Christmas, if you will, around the 12 Days of Christmas. Anything like that that catches people's eyes and ears is very beneficial.
Nice. You have a mailing list for people that are looking to just get news about what's happening.
Absolutely.
with the new build and sure. And potentially with new pets that are coming through and so on. How does that work?
You can simply visit our website and you can sign up and subscribe to receive our email blasts, our e-news, if you will, on a regular basis. You can also visit our Facebook page and you can like us on Facebook. Which is another way for you to stay in touch with all of the different programs, activities, and happenings, as well as the current animals that we have up for adoption, too. So we always try to feature at least a couple of those stories on our Facebook site.
Very nice.
We think dogs and cats.
Right.
What other kind of animals have you seen through the doors?
We do get, you know, so I'll call it wildlife in general.
Okay.
You know, we do from time to time, but the overwhelming majority, of course, are dogs and cats, so.
We think about the idea of an animal shelter for the sake of caring for the animals until they can be adopted out, which ultimately mm-hmm. is the end goal, certainly. Friends for Animals of Metro Detroit, Peter, as I read through your materials and I look at the website, really does so much more than that in terms of providing support for people that are pet owners, mm-hmm. Helping in the transition for a new pet coming in, and also, frankly, in terms of an opportunity for a sort of therapeutic resource for people that maybe just for whatever reason can't own a pet, to come in and volunteer their time to still have that connection with animals. So talk a little about
sure.
those other resources.
No, you're right on both counts. You know, we had referenced earlier, for example, a reason that people might relinquish their animal, and that would be because they can't afford to feed it. We have a pet food program, if you will. It's called Operation Feed Fido. And if you have fallen on hard times and you need assistance in terms of securing pet food for your dog or your cat or your puppy or your kitty, you can sign up, register with us, and you can come on a regular basis. And, of course, depending on our supply, if you will, you know, we will do everything that we can to provide you with food so that you can keep that animal where we know it belongs, and that's in your loving home. We've got pet training that we offer, and again, you can find this information out on our website. We have people that are certified in behavioral training for pets, and especially if you're a new pet owner, it's highly recommended. You will find that across the nation, actually, the number one reason, you had referenced why people surrender animals, but the number one reason that they do surrender them is because these animals have behavioral issues that owners can't overcome. And what we try to do is provide you with the training and the resources that are necessary so that you can see that, you know what, you can control this most of the time. So we offer those types of resources. We've got a behavior helpline. We've got a low-cost sterilization and microchip voucher program. We absolutely encourage everyone to get their animals, their pets, microchipped. And if you need a little bit of assistance with that, we do have vouchers that are available. So again, you can check out that resource online. And do know that once you adopt from us, your animal will not only be microchipped, but will also be spay-neutered, which is something that every animal welfare group is a huge proponent of. So,
the microchip thing, it's we hear a lot about that. Well, we hear about the human species potentially being, you know, considering something like that. But why is it such a benefit for a pet?
Because once you once your animal is microchipped, there is a unique identifier, a unique number, if you will, that's assigned to that chip. And that is entered into a national database so that if, unfortunately, you become separated from your animal and somebody rescues that animal or animal control officers pick it up as a stray, they will immediately scan that animal to see if it's microchipped. And if it is, they can quickly identify who the owner is. And then your chances, of course, are very high that you will be able to retrieve your animal if it's lost. This is especially beneficial. You know, in recent years, we've seen all these catastrophes and natural disasters and so forth. You know, thank God that these owners have had their animals, because, I mean, a microchip, because if they do, of course, first responders are able to eventually, once circumstances allow, reunite families with the pets that they were separated from.
Well, I never thought of that component. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant.
We're talking with Peter Poulos from the Friends for Animals of Metro Detroit, and we'll give you a chance to say it again, but
sure.
how do our listeners get in touch with you?
Easiest way, again, it's Metro Detroit Animals, all one word, .org. So you can visit our website. It's a very user-friendly site. It's got information on there from everything from the adoptable animals that are available at any given day, as well as volunteer opportunities, which is something I know that we wanted to talk about, because, Susan, you had mentioned that if you can't adopt an animal, what are other ways that you can display your passion, your affection, your love for companion animals? And volunteering is one of those ways. Oftentimes people, you know, especially when they get in their retirement years and they're moving from a house into, you know, let's say a residence, a senior residence and so forth that perhaps doesn't allow pets, they still want to get their doggy fix, their puppy fix. They can go online and they can sign up to volunteer. We use volunteers for any number of functions. They can come to the shelter after they receive training, and they can assist us with walking the dogs every day. You know, we don't have the staff capacity to give the animals all the love and attention on our own that these animals need. So volunteers that serve that function, that serve that task, come in and they'll walk the animals, they'll spend time with them. It helps with socializing the animal, and at the same time, it's very gratifying for the volunteer.
And are all of the animals that are sort of within your domain, are they housed there, or are there foster situations?
Well, fostering, I was
going
to reference that. Yeah, fostering is another volunteer opportunity.
Sure.
In fact, fosters play a tremendous role for us. First and foremost, when we take animals in, and this does happen, unfortunately, from time to time, that are injured and that need special attention for a significant amount of time, the kennel itself is not the best environment for those animals to receive that kind of care that they need. So this is where the fosters come in. And fosters, what they do is they agree to take these animals into their homes on a temporary basis and provide the type of care. Oftentimes there's, you know, the application of medications and so forth that are involved with that. So they make sure that the animals are treated properly and so forth, and until they can heal well enough to be brought back into the kennel and be placed up for adoption.
I wonder how many of those fosters end up keeping the
You know, there's animals. A term in the animal welfare industry, if you will, it's called foster failure. And you will hear that often enough. Personally, it's a reason I know I can't foster, because...
Because you want to keep them all.
I'm going to want to keep it. And I've already got a couple of dogs right now. And in fact, when I first got into this type of work, my wife's... My first day of going onto the job, my wife's edict for me was, do not bring any more animals home. So we've got two dogs right now.
What is it about once they're there, it just seems like they need to be there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
No, it takes a special person to foster, and then to be able to, you know, after you, you know, develop that relationship, bond.
I know we're gonna wrap things up here in a couple of minutes, but I'm looking at the logo on your shirt, mm-hmm. and all of this, you know, paperwork that we've got, and I just want to know, and people will see it when they go to the website.
MetroDetroitAnimals.org.
Okay, so what happened in the conference room when we unveiled this logo with clearly a dog's paw print on it, right? Because I know
what's your
that,
problem, Alan?
I'm not saying there's
a problem. I just wanted to know.
No, I'm kidding.
There are actually nationally more cat owners than there are dog owners.
I know that. Yeah,
so,
sure.
You know, so you knew that, right?
Well,
right,
and
so,
I think we're all. Yeah. I know I'm a dog person. Yeah. I think Susan's a dog person.
Yes.
But you know, I mean, cats obviously need the same attention
as
well, right?
Yeah.
They just don't need their paw on a logo.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a funny one. Well, as we sort of wrap up, we have a special connection here at WHFR to Friends for Animals of Metro mm-hmm. Detroit. And Alan, this was a long time ago before you got here, but we actually used to do some volunteering where we would pick a day in the spring or summer and bring our entire crew of volunteers out to help and walk animals and pet them and love them and so on. It was sort of the WHFR day for pet adoptions and so on. Same location, of course. Mm-hmm. And we've had a couple of our volunteers adopt because of that experience, which is an amazing thing. And Elaine was there, your mm-hmm. director, Elaine Green, so long time ago. But we want to do more of that. We want to get back involved in that. So this is my official declaration.
Okay.
And I'm wondering how many other sort of community groups and things you partner with, because I sure see your group all over the place. Mm-hmm. You know, it's events and, you know, different festivals and functions. And it seems like anytime something's going on in the community, you represent in some mm-hmm. way. And that's awesome. And it must work because.
Oh, absolutely. Because we do have many group volunteer opportunities. And of course, we have a number of companies that come and they do so in an organized fashion. One that quickly leaps to mind, especially given where we are, is Ford Motor Company. Mm-hmm. Ford Motor Company has a group of volunteers that will visit us as a group on a regular basis. And they will assist with a lot of hands-on projects, if you will, whether it's assisting with, you know, cleaning up and maintaining areas of the shelter and areas of the play yard and so forth. So that's a great opportunity. You know, you mentioned opportunities for groups, and we didn't talk a little bit about some of the giving opportunities. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to take that opportunity now.
Please.
We have, and this will be the 13th year coming up, it's just 13th annual Mutt Strut Walk and 5K Run, which will be held at Ford Field on Saturday, May 12th. Ford Field here in Dearborn. And what that does is affords you the opportunity to help fundraise on our behalf, but at the same time, you can put a team together. And whether this team is from a company, which is very popular, or it could be at your church or at your school, to put groups together and they can come out. And the unique qualifier here, unlike other walks, is you can bring your furry friend with you. And we've got courses that are set out. We've got lots of activities for people that either before or after when they actually take the stroll itself. We've got lure courses and training tips and so forth. There'll be 25 plus exhibitors on hand with lots of freebies. So it's great to come out there, and there's also a 5K run that's associated with that event. So that's coming up again on Saturday, May 12th, and you can check out online in terms of getting the details to get your team registered and signed up, and you can help fundraise on our behalf. So I'd appreciate any and all. We'll appreciate the support.
Nice. If somebody literally is listening right now, I love animals. I've had them. I'm not in a position to have them now. But I have a little extra money, and I mm-hmm. know they're working hard over there at the Friends for Animals of Metro Detroit. You'll just take a check?
Absolutely. Yes. Okay. Absolutely. You can go online, again, visit our website. I'll say the URL one more time, Metro Detroit.
Phone number, address.
Animals.org is the most efficient way to do that.
Is it Detroit Animals?
MetroDetroitAnimals.org, and you will see there front and center a big Donate Now button, great. And you can click that. Additionally, there's a drop down, if you will. We've got a number of programs that if you want to earmark your support, you know, specifically for a certain, could be doing something in honor of someone or a tribute. We reference the new shelter, of course. You can visit that portion of our website and you can go online, and your money, if you want, you can actually dedicate your contribution to assisting us with completing our new shelter. So there's any number of ways that people can contribute, and we will take any amount, no amount's too small. So it all makes a difference. And in addition to that, let me also add that you will see our wish list online. So if it's not necessarily a monetary donation that you're able to provide us with, but you have the ability to donate, you know, we're in need of everything from blankets and towels and newspapers and so forth, all the types of things that we use in the shelter. Almost all of that exclusively comes from people that donate to us every day that assist us and helps us, keeps costs down, and provides us with products that that we use.
Nice. We're proud to represent Henry Ford College, and I know we do quite a few
drives
here
yes.
at the school as well.
Yes.
As I've contributed to those, and
appreciate
I love
very
that.
Much.
It's a wonderful
yeah.
sense of community.
Mm-hmm.
Peter, you've been most informative today. Great
Good.
Information, and
Thank you.
We do love our pets, and we're glad to have resources to support that in a number of ways. In addition discussion. We'd love to have you back when we get closer to that grand opening.
Absolutely.
And so much more. So we'll talk more about all that fun stuff.
We appreciate that. Again, we broke ground just last October, and we've been blessed that they didn't find any surprises, either underground with the previous Amtrak station and
sure.
so forth, that we are actually a little bit ahead of schedule. So if things hold the way we think that they're going to, we will be in there by early fall. So.
It doesn't always work well for radio, but bring some dogs or cats next time. Who knows what Susan and I are going to walk away from the studio with.
There you go. Well, Susan, you mentioned before we started that you're looking to adopt. So anytime you're ready, you come on down and we'll make sure that we send you home with an animal that meets your current lifestyle. And you're welcome.
I look forward to it.
Great.
We thank you for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Pleasure to get to talk to you as well. Peter Poulos, who is the Director of Marketing and Development at Friends for Animals of Metro Detroit. So much information available on their website, and certainly the community wants to support all the great things that you're doing as well. So we thank you for listening today, too. We've got more on the way. This is the new WHFR Journal. Please stay tuned.
Keyboard Cat, Hamilton the Pug, and Toast Meets World. These are some of the Internet's most beloved pets. And they all have one thing in common. Their stories started in a shelter. Start your story. Adopt a dog or cat today. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Training that pet to play the keyboard, that's optional. Start a story. Adopt a shelter or rescue pet today. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Let your creativity shine while learning the various facets of the baking and pastry field. With Henry Ford College's Certificate in Baking and Pastry, students will explore international cuisine and the art of garde-manger by preparing decorative food displays. For more information, please contact the Student and Culinary Arts Center by calling 313-845-1572 or visit them on the web at hfcc.edu/programs.
It's the new WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw, and we bring in Josh Hebert this week to talk about things going on sports-wise. Now, of course, last week, our show got snowed out, so
yeah.
Some of the things we talked about, specifically the roller hockey games, which took place last weekend, might have been a little out of date when we finally aired the program on Tuesday, but there's still a lot going on in the sports world here at HFC.
There is. Actually, the Henry Ford Hawks played on Wednesday night in the basketball arena here.
Valentine's Day.
Yeah. And they beat SC4.
St. Clair County Community College. Yes, there you go.
A little bit of a tongue twister there, Alan. The Hawks moved to 19-5 on the season as a whole, and a 10-2 in conference.
In any sport, that's a darn good record,
is,
isn't
that
it?
That is. Yeah. And they're also undefeated at home on the season. Their next home game, for the people who want to go out and visit.
Don't jinx them, right?
Yeah. No. That is Saturday, tomorrow
yeah.
at 3 p.m.
Tomorrow, 3 o'clock, right here on the HSC campus in the Athletic Center. The last home game for the season. Now,
it's not the last home game.
Okay.
The last home game is Monday the 26th.
Oh, okay. The next home game is, okay, tomorrow. Thank you very much. Sorry, my bad.
You're good. And then you have roller hockey vying for one or two seed this weekend in their final regular season tournament. These are in Chicago, so a little bit of a track. They'll play Saturday at 10 a.m. and 6 p.m., and then they'll play again Sunday at 8 a.m., all in Chicago, as they fight for that number one or two seed.
And that's going to be for the upcoming
tournament,
the playoff tournament, and things that they're going to be involved in. And basketball, of course, I would assume they're going to have a conference tournament.
Yes.
And then
they'll be near the top of that in seeding-wise. And then if they win that tournament, they'll move on to the national tournament, as Coach Shepard said a few weeks ago.
Correct, yes.
And then I do want to apologize in advance if I mess up any of these names.
Okay.
But Henry Ford does have 6 wrestlers that were named to the NWCA Academic All-American team.
Now, is this, just like we talk about roller hockey in their first season, this is like what, the third season
This is
for
actually
wrestling?
The first season as a varsity sport.
Oh, as a varsity sport. They were a club sport for a couple of years and moved up to a varsity sport.
Yeah.
That's important, right?
It is.
Yeah.
Varsity, they get to go to more places, get to do more tournaments, actually get are able to go to the national championship. For them, if anybody qualifies.
So, who are these wrestlers?
The wrestlers
that got
that,
these accolades.
Yeah.
Yes.
The wrestlers who got the academic All American, and again, I'm sorry if I mispronounce any of the names, Martin Butos and Mari Al Abdoui, Brandon Garcia, Hunter Lysiness, Dominic Mancia, and Colin McFarlane, yeah.
So congratulations to all of them.
Yes.
Obviously doing well on the mat and also
doing well
for
in
us,
the classroom.
You know, professors here at HFC in the classroom. That's always nice to see. So.
That's pretty nice for them. Of course, roller hockey, again, good luck to them. Good luck to basketball tomorrow. Exciting time to be a hockeyer at HFC.
Excellent. We look forward to talking to you again soon. Josh Hebert joining us here on the new WHFR Journal. And obviously, we thank you all for joining us as well. A couple of things we want to mention in terms of Black History Month events coming up here on HFC. We talked last week about things that took place over the course of last week, or this past week, I guess. Next Wednesday, February 21st, from 11 to 12:30 in Building L, in the Rosenau Conference Room of the ASCC, we'll have Black History Trivia, test your knowledge of important people, events, and facts in Black history with a high-intensity trivia game show. There will be cash prizes awarded. That's coming up on Wednesday, 11 o'clock in the ASCC. That's Building L, Rosenau Conference Room here on the HFC campus. And then also next Thursday, the 22nd, and next Friday, a week from today, from 12 until 2 here in the Student Center Building, which is Building M, there will be a heart health clinic, a clinic providing information about heart disease and how to prevent it, as well as providing information and other important health screenings. HFC student nurses will provide blood pressure checks for free, BMI checks, and screenings for depression. Of course, these are health issues that affect just about everybody, but history or research shows also significant for those in the African American community. So Black History Month events coming up next week here at HFC. I'm Alan Mazurek along with Susan McGraw. Thanks for joining us for the new WHFR Journal. Have a great weekend. Music comes up next here on the station Making Waves.
You know how doctors recommend a daily diet of 5 food groups? Veggies, fruits, grains, dairy, and protein? Well, I have one more to add to that list. Rock and roll. Hey, I'm DJ Chelsea Marie. Join me every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m. for Dinner with Chelsea, where I will serve up a generous portion of rock, post-hardcore, and metal music, all spun right here on WHFR. It's dinner music with a kick. So join me every Saturday night from 4 to 6 p.m. for Dinner with Chelsea right here on 89.3 FM WHFR Dearborn.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
Stay. Yeah. touchdown.